Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. Dr. Williams is the author of the acclaimed book, Shattered by the Darkness, Putting the Pieces Back Together After Child Abuse. Dr. Williams is on the senior leadership team at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. And Dr. Williams travels the United States speaking and training professionals, parents, and victims about the importance of dealing with abuse and personal trauma head on and not being afraid to break the silence of your own personal pain. Feel free to call in to tonight's show at 888-627-6008 and speak with Dr. Williams and his guests live on air. And now, your host, Dr. Williams.
Well, good evening and welcome to another live edition on this beautiful Sunday evening in the most awesome city, I believe, in the world, Houston, Texas. And you can look right behind me. It looks like we're kind of partly cloudy out there, but the clouds are beautiful right behind me. It's looking over the Texas Medical Center. And I am proud tonight that one of our guests is going to be on this evening. You're going to have the whole show after I do my little fluff at the beginning, is a Houstonian. So he's going to be right here with us. And I always love to spotlight some of the awesome people that we have right here in my opinion, the best city in the world. I love Houston, Texas. I came from Southern Illinois, went to Missouri, and then from Missouri came here, and I wish I came to Houston years before that. But it's an awesome stop right before heaven. The next best thing is Houston. So we welcome you to the program. If you want to get involved tonight, there's all kinds of different ways. You can get right on the Shattered by the Darkness page, our Facebook page, and you can watch it live there. And you can comment there. And during the commercial break, I will look on there to see if anybody has a question or a comment. You can also text right here, 832-396-6525. And I get a lot of texts during the show and during the commercial break. I will go down and check to see if there's any questions or comments on here. But most, this is the one that I really like, to be honest with you, is you calling in to the BBS radio station at 888-627-6008. And I have a feeling, possibly, not for sure, but we have people that have been on the show that are collaborating with our guest tonight in an upcoming book that we will be talking about. And maybe she'll call in. Who knows? I would love to have her call in and tell us something about our guest that he don't want us to know. But anyway, it is great to have you with us this evening. And, you know, it's been one of those weeks. I hope you had an awesome Easter. I hope that weekend didn't wear you out. If you're in the ministry, like some of us are, it is a long weekend. I think one of the hardest, the most blessing, but the hardest messages to share and try to convey in new and different ways through a different set of eyes to see stories is the Christmas story and the Easter story. To try to make them, and we don't have to change the truth, just try to make them deeper, more meaningful. And when life happens to us, it seems like we get into the rut of thinking that's the way it's always going to be, that that's the way it was, and it's not special anymore. We do that in our relationships. We do that with our kids. We do that with our jobs. And it seems like a lot of times it becomes old hat. And sometimes life can do that to you also. And, you know, a lot of times I was speaking at Texas Children's this week to some doctors. And one of them asked me, Greg, where did you get the strength to get through what you got through? And, you know, that's a question that I usually answer with, well, because I'm so hard-headed and stubborn, I didn't let my dad win. I wanted to prove him wrong. But I think sometimes strength doesn't come from winning. Your strength's developed from the trials that you go through. And then when you go through those hardships, and then you decide not to surrender, that's when it becomes strength. No matter what I'm in, no matter what I'm going to face tomorrow, no matter what I'm dealing with right now, I just choose not to give up, not to throw in the towel. I'm just hard-headed enough to say I'm going to keep on keeping on until God calls me home, and I'm not going to take the word defeat. And there are two ways of exerting your strength. And one of those is pushing down, and the other is pulling up. I pushed down for too many years. I pushed all that anxiety, all that trauma that our guest tonight is a professional and has so much wisdom on this about trauma. We push that down inside of us to where it can be a factor of destruction and it becomes toxic. We need to pull that stuff up and allow it to propel us to the next level. And, you know, difficulties are really designed to encourage us, not to discourage us. And even in the Bible, it says there's nothing more beautiful than when the Bible has something to say about it. The Bible tells us that there's some things worth fighting for. And then it even goes on through and says there's some things worth dying for. And I think you, yourself, you're a masterpiece. You have been designed by a creator that knows everything about you and has been there to sustain you through every one of those trials, those hurts, and those pains. They're not there to destroy you. They are there for you to be strengthened by. Grab them of what the enemy thinks is going to destroy you and to make them into your fuel that takes you to the next level. Take all that negativity, grace it with the Holy Spirit, and cause it to be positivity in your life and help other people. And I tell you, our guest tonight has seen some of the people with the years that he has been as a chaplain in several different places. But he was a chaplain with the Texas Department of Criminal Justice for 10 years, 2015 to 2025, serving in the largest female prison in Texas with over 2,200 women. He was also a volunteer chaplain at Houston's County Jail. I have spoken there. That's a place that you want to visit, but you don't want to stay very long. But it is a challenge. And for him to care enough to go there and help and to talk to the inmates, include some of their stories in his writings. He has also been a resident chaplain at Memorial Hospital, Memorial Hermann Hospital, which, if I'm wrong, if it's the one at the medical center, it's right there. It's just right there, right on the other side of that ink pen. And that's where it's at. And he has done so many things. He's been married for, not only being a chaplain and being inside Harris County Jail, but he's been married over 33 years. That's right there enough to have him a guest on the show. And he lives in the most awesome city in the world. So it's my pleasure to welcome to you an author, a chaplain, a man of God, but somebody that's out there to always lend a helping heart, an open ear, and a spirit that is willing to try to help and assist. And those people are few and far between. Dr. Kevin Rebick. Kevin, come on in, doctor. How are you this evening?
Well, I'm great, and I really appreciate that amazing introduction. I want to shake that guy's hand.
Well, go kiss your wife, and she thinks that much of you.
Yes, she has stuck around. She needs a medal for that. But I really appreciate being here. I mean, this is a great opportunity, a great platform, and I'm just so grateful that you're, braving the elements, so to speak, in a hostile world that doesn't want to talk about these things and would really rather just not know about them, just push them under the carpet and move on and let somebody else deal with it. So
but
I want
to
commend you.
I've endured it, but I speak about it. But doctor, you took it to the next level. You went to the battleground. I just speak to the professionals that deal with the people that go to the battleground. Know what I mean? You've been there in the prisons, in the jails, in the hospital where people's dying or losing a loved one or having a limb cut off or whatever the unbelievable situation. So you're the one that has the combat boots on. So we applaud you. You're the champion here.
Oh, I appreciate that. It really boils down to empathy.
Yes.
And, anyone who has suffered understands empathy, or they should. I mean, because they've been there, they've been hurting. And when other people are hurting, it should come naturally, to have empathy for them. And I think that it's really been my calling. I
Yeah.
didn't know what to do with all my own abuse for all those years and went off in all the wrong directions and made all the same mistakes that most of the inmates I met over the years, thousands of them made the same mistakes. I just ended up with a different outcome. And
Doctor, was there somebody that made a difference in your life during those times or shortly after that you said, hey, wait, I appreciated that, and that's kind of what lean you into this type of service?
yeah, there was a couple influential in my own salvation. I was actually in a county jail, and I've been arrested a couple of times, short term, but I got sober long enough to make the one good decision of my life. And because I'd been an addict, drugs and alcohol both, for several years, and I just got sober enough to make the decision to go to this place. My brother recommended it. And this couple, Mike and Colleen, is in rural Wisconsin, and they had rented out an old orphanage, and I was the first customer, so I had their undivided attention. And but I had gone to church. I grew up in a church, but Dad had weaponized church. Anything about church could get you in trouble, and we came to hate church. And so when he died, when I was 17, I put church behind me. Been there, done that. And these people weren't going to convince me otherwise. And I really gave them a hard time, but I commend them for hanging in there, for caring about me despite how I was acting, and to finally get through to me. And that was a pivotal moment, changed my whole life.
Do you think without faith, healing is even a possibility, true healing?
Well, I think you can be healed to an extent. I mean, people can get sober without
Yes.
faith. People can live a normal life, at least for the most part. But I think faith helps, complete it. I think faith makes it all worthwhile. It fills in all the corners, all the gaps. And that's why it's been my calling. It's been my career. Even at an academic level, when I was doing my doctoral research in Harris County Jail, like where you've been also, the third largest jail in the country. And 10 to 12,000 inmates. And, just hammering out my curriculum that I eventually ended up teaching both there and at the unit where I served for a decade. And, it's just, no, it's a calling. And I think once you've gone to that level of suffering, and that you learn some new things about life, you learn what's really important, and then when you find solutions to those things, then you just want to tell everybody. And when you, especially when you apply faith, it's a healing that is only comparable to the extent of your suffering.
Yeah.
Like my wife says, well, I don't have a big hairy testimony like you have. But I said, but you still have a testimony. And all that mine meant is I was that far away. So that when I came to the light, then it was that big of a shock. And that's all that meant, that I was
Yeah.
that far away.
Did you have the same experience and a lot more experience than I ever had? Because I just spoke one time at the Harris County Jail, to the inmates, that with your experience being there, were they like dry sponges just waiting to soak it up. They seemed so intent. There was no disrespect. There was no, it was like they were leaning in to every word. Did you catch them?
Yeah,
yeah, looking
I
for
caught
something?
It. Yeah, I caught it there all the time. I mean, the fact that someone was bringing them something positive and something that made sense, you know, and they weren't even convicted yet. You know, they're just in the sentencing phase. You know, they haven't gone to trial yet and all that. They're just waiting. And then on the other side, when they're actually in prison, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
And when you bring them something that's full of light and hope and health and sanity, and that you also can empathize with where they're at, that I get it, that you've been an addict. I get it, that you've gone through trauma and you don't know what to do with it and things like that. They are, I'm telling you, it's like feeding out of your hand. And it was
Do you think that they're in the back of their mind that, and maybe you've had personal one-on-one discussions, that, hey, this is a generational curse that's been passed down from, you know, my grandpa to my dad to me. I don't want to do this to my kids. And they're looking for a way to break that cycle of this evilness, of this out of control nature. And it seems like they're wanting that direction, that help, but they don't know where to get it.
They definitely do. And there are a lot of programs that are offered in prison. You know, God is at work, and there's no denying that. There is a point where they are so ready to receive. And the difference is that does someone get where they're coming from? I mean, you can minister to them. If you've never had a trauma, bad trauma in your life, you can still go out there and minister to them. You're still bringing light and truth and hope. You know, my church has a prison ministry that goes out there regularly. And the leader has never had anything like that in her life. But the difference is the depth that someone who's been there can go. Because now we're talking as peers, in a sense, that I've been traumatized too. Some of those girls, I'd say most of them, molested, abused, raped, starting early childhood.
Yeah.
You know, turned out by their parent, by their mother, to support her addict. You know, let the daughter, 10-year-old daughter, be with her boyfriends, things like that. One girl was molested so badly at home, she left home at age 8 to live on the streets. And, you know, home was worse than the streets. And then it's inevitable they're going to end up in prison. They're going to be doing all the wrong things, trying to fix what's broken. Only those things don't work. And they just
make is our system needing to be revamped? Do you see something that's inside that prison wall with the work that you did inside the women's prison with over 2,200 inmates? You're thinking, hey, wait, this is a broken record. We have to put on a new song because this isn't working, or is it pretty good right now?
Well, let me put it this way. I saw a decline recently, and I'm retired now, so I can say that. I couldn't say that as an employee.
Yeah.
But there has been a decline recently from 1986 until about 2015 when I started. You know, they had lowered recidivism from 86% to about 18%. And they did that through rehabilitation. It's called RPD, Rehabilitation Programs Division. And they steadily started bringing in chaplains. They started having programming. They started, you know, bringing volunteers in. And it changed the whole culture. Well, something shifted. And it kind of drifted away from rehabilitation. And then it became more about rules.
Yeah.
And I think that if they lose that, if they lose all the momentum they gained over that, however many years that was, decades, but they can't take that 18% for granted. If they lose rehabilitation and they focus instead on rules, they're taking giant backward steps in progress. And that 18% is going to start spiking again.
Yeah.
They have to give them something while they're there. It's not just training them in skills, it's helping them to transform their hearts. You have to give them tools to work with, actual tools to do things differently. I mean, offering AA is one thing. A lot of people get sober on AA, but Christian 12 Steps offers something more. And my program, Family Systems, that was an amazing tool I found late in life. I've been a Christian since 74. And when I found Family Systems late in life, while going to seminary, going back in my 40s and 50s to finish my education, it was a life changer. I mean, it's one thing to have faith. It's one thing to have the Holy Spirit. It's one thing to make a lot of progress and have a lot of growth. But the thing with family systems, it's based on emotions and family dynamics that are true all around the world. And that just changed my life because emotions were my problem. I was still an emotional critter, and I still had these churnings, no matter how far I climbed, how successful I became, I still had reactions inside me that were not healthy, and I'd
Yeah,
control.
you're mentioning that, and I wrote down something somewhere in my little notes. The Bradshaw's three processes involved internalizing shame, which it means being stop being an emotion and starts becoming an identity. I circle that in my book. I underlined it and highlighted it and said, wait, when it shifts from an emotion to an identity, that's a whole different ballgame, is it not?
And that's, I think, extensive trauma, especially, is going to induce that. You're going to feel ashamed. You're a kid. All these things are being inflicted on you, and you feel ashamed. You feel like you don't want anybody to know what's going on. You're embarrassed. You feel guilty for what maybe I did do something wrong, and all that. And I think shame is a primary driver of unhealthy behavior. I think it's an almost an uncovered gem because even in family systems, the normal what I call secular systems has 8 steps. Murray Bowen, 8 steps. Well, the more I worked with inmates and actual broken people who I could relate to, who were going through some of the same things I went through, and when I found relief, I immediately added faith to the equation. I think it's something the founder started but never did finish. And there are a lot of Christian systems people like Dr. Creech in Baylor. And he's been my mentor all through my whole career, starting as a doctoral student. And he agrees that faith has to be part of the picture. I actually included it in my version, and I also added shame. This was just
Well,
last year.
don't you think shame from the beginning of time
Yes.
was one of the devil's main tools? You know,
Yes.
they took a bite of that forbidden fruit, and what did immediately come upon them? Oh no, we're naked. We got to cover up. There
Guilt
was a
and shame.
shame there.
Yeah.
So that's one of his
One of his most powerful
bullets.
tools. Yes. Yes. He's driven more people to destroy their lives. He's used the church to use shame against people. He's used teachers. He's used authorities of all kinds to constantly add shame. And it just drives them further into whatever addiction they have, whatever problems they have. It just drives them down instead of, it's almost like non-addicts. Can't you see what this is doing to your life? Can't you see it's destroying you? So they're like, yeah, well, I wish I would have thought of that,
You
of course they
know,
can see it, they don't know what to do.
before we jump into trauma, because I want to really drill down deep right after the commercial break on this repurposing trauma book. How do you deal with somebody that has been traumatized, knowing that faith is a piece of the healing process? It's the balm, it's the band-aid, it's the ointment that needs to be there. But when they're traumatized by the church, How do we function in that arena, doctor, to be able to say, hey, wait, the church is the one that's abused you? How do we deal with that as a country, as religious people?
Well, and let me just say, I agree that that is one, terrible type of trauma, but there's all kinds of trauma. Sometimes it's accidental trauma. Sometimes it's military trauma. Sometimes it's crimes. Crimes committed in your family, it traumatized you, sent you spinning off. So yeah, church trauma is one of many. But the first thing I would do, like for example, I taught my class in the faith-based dorm, which is basically 58 women for about 4 months in a classroom. And I would start on day one, I'd say, we're going to talk about your worst day. We're going to pull back the Oz curtain. And we're going to talk about your worst damage, your worst trauma, and I'm going to give you tools to help you with that. And the thing is, they don't need kid gloves. They don't need pampering. They don't need sympathy. This gushing, oh, you poor thing, you went through all that. They don't need that. They're going to take advantage of that. That's going to be something they can milk. They need some hard, straight up truth. And one of the things, I tell them, we're gonna help you, but you have to look in the mirror. You have to be honest. And I'm not gonna be able to help you if you can't be honest. So I've been where you are. I've been in your chairs. I've been arrested. I've been an addict. I've been an alcoholic. And I get it. But the way out is not gonna be easy or straightforward. But if you're honest and you're willing to put in the work, we're going to make some progress before you leave this class. So things like that.
That's good. Do you have the copy of your book there that you can hold up on
I
the
do.
screen? Because during the commercial break, I want people to get online and buy it. Pat, back it up a little bit. Let's see. It's called Repurposing Scars:
Yeah.
Meaningful Life After the Enduring Damage of Trauma. And
Sorry, but the
this
back.
is a doctor, the picture on the cover is basically an awesome illustration
Yeah.
of what that book's all about, and explain that picture.
Well, I was helping a farmer neighbor, okay, build a fence. And there's this young sapling along the fence line. So I helped him staple the wire to the tree. And then you plant a cedar fence post and then you move on down the row. Well, I remember doing that years and years later. I went back and I found that tree, which is a half hour, I mean, a half a mile from where I grew up, where the most of the abuse occurred. So it was a neighbor farmer, and I found that tree 35 years later, took a picture, and that barbed wire, I just thought was a perfect illustration. From a distance, it's a perfectly healthy oak tree. You can't tell there's anything wrong. Then you get up close, and wait a minute, that barbed wire is coming right out from the middle of the tree. You can't take it out. It's part of what the tree is. It's part of its identity. And you can't take it out. So it just had to grow around it. And just like kids, they have this trauma stapled to them when they're young. And they just have to grow around it because they're still alive. But that thing isn't going away. And they have to deal with it the best they can. And then the problem is that they're going to do something. So here's the trauma, here's the damage. And now they're left with that. Maybe it's going to happen again tomorrow, but then they're going to have to deal with that too. And what are they going to do about it? There's going to be some kind of reaction. And the problem with that reaction is it's usually going to be unhealthy. I started acting out early on, a very young kid. I mean, I had matches put between my toes when I was about 5 years old. And I kept shaking them off. He kept putting them on till they finally went out in a puddle of melted skin. And things like that are going to have a reaction. When he beat me for 45 minutes because I was doing something where I would, could have got hurt, that's going to cause a reaction. And I started acting out at a very young age. I started stealing, just stealing stuff out of stores, just being mischievous, trying to set a bush on fire behind a police station, putting big things on railroad tracks, just anything we could do to act out because we didn't know how to deal with it. We didn't even know we were being traumatized. All we knew was that this is bad and I can't handle it. And keep that up long enough, and that kid's going to start developing some serious bad habits. And those bad habits are going to inevitably going to turn to things like addiction, crime, violence, things like that.
Wow. Tell you what, we're going to take our commercial break. We're at the bottom of the hour already. The hour is flying by. That was a quick 30 minutes. But on the other side of this, I want to start off the next segment after this short commercial, Doctor, with let's tell everybody the five books that you've written. I also want to find out about this new book that you're going to be writing with a friend of ours, and where your ministry seems to be going in the near future with your writings. And then I really want to dive in deep. Into trauma, and if somebody's listening, what's some of the first two or three steps that they need to take to help that healing process begin? It's a long journey, but what can we do? And we're going to talk about that right on the other side of the break. 888-627-6008. Don't leave us. We'll be right back in about a minute and 10 seconds. Hang with us.
Get ready for a life-changing journey. From the best-selling author of Shattered by the Darkness and When the Dark Clouds Come, Dr. Gregory Williams is back with his highly anticipated third book, Embracing Your Scars, Learning How to Turn Life's Pain into Life's Power and Purpose. Have you ever wondered how to transform your struggles into strength? Do you want to stop hiding behind the pain, the heartache, and instead learn how to turn those scars into the very fuel that propels you towards greatness? If you do, then this book is for you. In Embracing Your Scars, Dr. Williams shows you how to take the negative experiences of your past and turn them into the very source of your future success. Don't miss out, because your transformation begins here. The book is available soon on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever great books are sold.
All righty, welcome back. And we have our guest tonight. And Doctor, I was going to have you, if you would, just tell us, you have five books and you're getting ready to do your six. Here I thought doing three was something. But how many years is involved in over the time that these five books were written?
Pretty much about 15 years total.
Oh, that's good.
First one was The Carpenter Shop. And that's basically my glorified testimony.
Okay.
Stumbling into the carpenter shop, needing help, blubbering, having to trust the carpenter. He brings out his toolbox and all that. And that was the first one. I don't know if I'm in trouble. I fuzzed the background, so I'm in trouble.
There it is.
Okay.
Okay, there's the carpenter shop. Okay, then the second one?
The second one was my curriculum, which I've been teaching at the unit. I also taught it at Harris County Jail.
Now, is this something, Doctor, that can be used in what? Churches?
Yeah, it can be used in churches. That's my new goal, is to recast it in a way that could be presented in churches. Even if someone didn't know about family systems, that they could use. I also came up with a student workbook that should help the. This I actually I don't know how to get this. So there we go.
You got it. Yeah, right there
in front of me. Okay.
Yeah, that's good.
I actually used AI to help me with that to cast it to a high school level.
Good.
The other was an academic book. So okay. They had me to interpret, but when I'm not there, then that will help. So that's something we're working on. I'm working with my church on getting the classes recorded and getting them on YouTube. So someone with the workbook, a student workbook, and the videos, anybody could present it anywhere.
Good.
So we actually talked about getting it throughout the prison system in Texas too.
That'd be awesome. And yeah. Then the other one is Repurposing Scars.
Yeah,
well, we've already shown a couple of times, but there it
yeah.
is.
Yeah, I'm gonna try to show it again.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And I've read that. cover to cover, and that's excellent, excellent book. And the special message of Jesus' scars.
Yeah.
Tell me about that one.
All right. I don't know if you can see it well.
Yeah, I got it.
So the whole subject of scarring, I mean, I went to the scriptures and I found, you know, in John 20:25, you know, my pastor was talking about it this morning, talking about doubting Thomas. Okay, so the thing is that I think that there's more to be said about the scarring. The fact that Jesus came out of the tomb with anything other than pristine flesh, I think that's very significant. And I think a lot of that is missed because people don't see it in the case of his trauma. So why wasn't his trauma just erased? Why wasn't he just healed, perfect skin? And it wasn't just hands, feet, and side. I mean, he had a crown of thorns put on him. He had his beard torn out. He had his back shredded. So his body was covered with scars. If he had a scar on his hand and his side and his feet, he had other scars too. And I'm like, why does he have those? Why did he come out that way?
Mm-hmm.
And the more I studied, the more I realized in the Greek, the word for that mark or scar is tufos. And it's only 15 times in the Greek. And only one of those is in that Doubting Thomas story. All the other 14 uses mean example. And I'm thinking, so he came to set the example. He came for broken people. He said that himself. All kinds of oppressed people, blind people, people in prison, oppressed people. He came for broken people. And my thought was that he also showed them how to do it. You take your damage into the tomb, old life, right? Symbolized by baptism. And you take your damage out of that tomb, symbolizing new life. Then you go on to set an example. You go on to a life of purpose and a mission, no different from your own mission there. And that's when your scars are repurposed.
Yeah.
It isn't just about the trauma. It's about what you do with them. God can put those to work.
And it makes us who we are, does it not, Doctor?
Yes. Yes. We find a new identity.
Yeah.
Our identity in him and in his purposes, in his service. It's always going to be about serving. I mean, service implies other people and implies relationships and, you know, vertical and horizontal. Our purpose is always going to be some kind of service, whether it's in the background doing accounting like my wife, whether it's, you know, whatever it is, cleaning the church. There's always a million ways to serve, but we will find our niche when we look for it in that way, no matter what's happened to us.
Yeah.
And the difference is we're gonna have more empathy as we go if we let him take us there instead of just
let me pick your brain here for a second. So about Jesus coming out of the grave with the scar still there, and I said, hey, wait, I need to let me feel them. Okay, so we know they're there. I'm preaching through Revelation right now. And when they got to the seven seal scrolls, everybody started crying and saying, who has the authority to open up these seals? And here comes the Lamb, as it was slain, as it was bloodied and beaten. The scars are still in heaven. How do we concept and conceive and work that all into, because our scars, I don't believe will be, but I believe Jesus's possibly will be.
Well, I've done some thought on that too. And my personal belief is they're still necessary. People still need to be able to relate to him. What he's saying is, I get you. I was broken too.
Yes.
I was broken just like you're broken. I can prove I was broken. And so they're still needed. That's why he came out of the tomb with them. But when it comes to the new heaven, new earth, hell and pain and death and crying and sorrow are abolished. So I think that time he'll be fully transformed like us. And all that will be left behind. It's not necessary anymore. But for now, it's still needed. People need to be able to relate to him.
Yeah, there hasn't been anything that we've gone through that he can't say, I know how it feels.
Right. He says that in the scripture, that nothing we can face isn't something he already faced, and including trauma. So one thing I want to say back to systems is that this was a major transformation for me. Like I say, I'd already been saved long term, but when I encountered systems, it was revelational, because this involved emotions. And I discovered that emotions are okay. I had basically feared emotions. I tried to live in my head, and it wasn't working. So I found out emotions are okay. We all have them. We all always have had them. And it's just the matter of being able to manage them. And that's what systems gave me, was were tools. And part of what qualified as, you know, a concept in family systems theory is that they're universal, always have been true. All relationships are emotional relationships. We come from emotional systems. We start out in one, we go to school, there's another one. We go to church, there's another one. We go to work, there's another one. We're members of multiple emotional systems, and our relationships center around that. The problem is this: we can't manage our emotions, then we're in trouble. And a lot of times we just don't know how to. It's like the word self-control in scripture. I talk about that a lot in all my books. And self-discipline, which implies sober mind. And 1 Timothy. You know, it's one thing to say, you need to get some self-control. And an addict says, I'd love some self-control. How do I do it? Well, you just pray. You just pray harder. Well, okay, that's great. And I prayed for a lot of years. But it wasn't enough detail. So just like the 12-step programs are successful on face value, okay, like I say, you can get sober with them. But emotional sobriety is a different matter.
Yeah.
Emotional maturity is a different matter. And I call mine emotional AA. So you're stair-stepping out of all this emotional chaos with actual tools. Like self-control is part of the process. Systems calls it differentiation. It's part of the process of managing yourself.
Yeah.
So here comes a potentially reactive situation. Okay, the warden's coming in to chew me out about something. Okay, so I got choices. I can defend myself. I can go back off on the warden. I can risk my job. Or I can internalize it and walk away and talk bad about her, backstab her. So this gives me a different tool. In the heat of the moment, I can actually differentiate that I don't have to react.
Yeah.
I can't control her. She can't control me. We're separate people.
And how important is a doctor for us to realize and to be cognizant of and highly aware of our emotions lie to us?
Oh.
They lie.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could be passionate about something, but I can be passionately wrong.
Yeah.
You know, I can look in the mirror and say, hey, I'm worthless. But then I look in the scripture, it says, no, I'm a masterpiece. So my emotions sometimes lead us down the wrong road, correct?
Absolutely, especially things like shame and guilt.
Yeah.
And we go around trying to prove how accomplished we are. I mean, it could be a CEO of a company, but be emotionally immature and not be able to handle things on a personal level. You go home and you just, you know, wig out at the smallest things and engage in all kinds of behaviors, trying to cope with these things that you're trying to convince the world you don't have.
Yeah.
And yeah, I just think it's a difference of having something practical so that you can get to that self-control in scripture. And you're also using your faith, because I encourage that above all else. Take any program that'll help you, great. Bring them, more the merrier, but always put faith first.
Yeah.
And then add, this is another new tool, but I think we just need that delineation to help us stair step out of it. And then also understanding what our normal reactions are, like cut off. Oh, you crossed my wires? Guess what? I don't know you. I'm cutting you off. I'm not speaking to you until you speak to me. I don't care if it's 10 years.
Yeah.
Families do that all the time.
Safe boundaries.
We're a nation of cutoffs
Yeah.
and triangling. Been doing it since kindergarten. We pull someone in to support our position. We tell stories about someone to get our support on our side. It doesn't matter if they're the odd man out. We feel a little better. So learning the tool, I can tolerate being the odd man out on the outside of the triangle. It's okay. I don't have to agree with you to be perfectly fine.
Yeah,
And if your
good.
goal is to make me join you by threatening to end our friendship, well, then maybe that's a choice you're making. But I
Yeah,
don't have to make that choice.
that's control.
That's why I'm politically neutral.
Right.
Yeah.
With the topic that I've been teaching on a lot around the country, vicarious trauma, you're getting ready to
Oh.
write your sixth book. And it's going to be on secondary trauma with a friend of ours, Eugenia Valencia. Tell me about that book and what it's going to be on and where you're at in the progress and why did you and Eugenia get together and partnership on this one?
Well, I helped her edit her book, which is coming out very soon, Perfectly Unloved. And you've had her on the show a couple of times, I
Yeah,
think.
she's great.
Yes. And so I was working up with it for about a year with her. And it's pretty much done now. So we've got like, what are we going to do next? What's our next project? And I had been thinking about secondary trauma for a while. It's just a natural evolution because not only are individuals traumatized, but when they grow up, they're going to bring that trauma everywhere they go. My wife had never been traumatized, so my trauma has traumatized her. Same with Eugenia. Her husband never been traumatized, but hers has had an impact on her and her husband. So likewise, all the professions, military, medical, doctors, nurses, first responders, firemen, EMTs,
Police
soldiers,
officers,
police officers. Yes, absolutely.
doctors.
Yes, doctors. I had doctors who were, wouldn't go into surgery without praying with me. And I know that they see the horrors. I saw the horrors as a resident chaplain. And it's shocking. Those big hospitals, half a dozen helicopters bringing in the worst of the worst. And that's traumatizing. And they can't help but take some of that home. And anyway, all kinds of other natural trauma, accidents, acts of God, acts of nature. We just d decided to divide it up into categories like that. And then we're going to address, it's actually going to be two parts. It's going to be academically researching all the different types and all the different ways that people can be traumatized. We're going to have all kinds of testimonies from professionals, and it's really going to be an academic slash practical book. And then we're also going to have actual testimonies. I know a lot of first responders. I know a lot of people. I know a guy who's a newly minted chaplain for the VA, and talk about traumatized people and how they bring that home from war, bring that to their families. And some have seen too much, some have done too much, different types of PTSD, and bringing that home, managing it long term. And their spouses are just kind of like secondary, vicarious victims in a sense. And then a lot of them don't know how to deal with it. They don't know the first thing to do about it. And so this book is going to, repurposing helps. That's also geared toward caregivers. But this one is going to be more specifically a self-help and a caregiver's guide.
And do you have a working title for that one yet, Doctor?
Well, right now, it's Calming the Ripple Effects of Secondary Trauma, a self-help and caregiver's guide. That's the working title. This is all brand new, last couple of months, and we're just working on the outline, but we have some good people lined up. And we would like to have you as a consultant.
Oh, I would love that. That seems to be the one that I'm getting called on the most with police departments around the country
Yes.
is they heard me speak at Dallas Crimes Against Children, and now I'm going to so many different police departments talking about vicarious trauma because they are traumatized.
Oh,
What
it's beautiful.
happened to them as a child, and then they walk into a room while they're on duty, that's exactly what they went through. How does that affect a
Oh man,
peer? It does.
it has to affect them. They see
Yeah.
the worst of the worst. They're the first on the line, on the scene, and they can't just shut it off. They can't flip a switch when they go home. It's going to give them nightmares. It's going to affect their moods. It's going to, no matter how well trained they are, until to some they need. And I looked on Amazon. There are only two books on the subject.
Yeah, it's still, and they're not good.
There's a
I've
thousand
read
books
all
on
that
it.
trying to find good research. There's a lot of work there. I hope you guys' book really becomes the number one place to look for
We
secondary trauma.
plan to do a deep dive, then we both have experience too. And we're
Yeah.
going to talk to people on the front lines who have experience. People, titled people, talking about experts in their fields, leaders. I'm going to talk to some leaders in the Texas Medical Center. Deal with this all day, every day, years and
This
years.
is one of those things, and tell me if I'm wrong. If you haven't been there, done that, you really can't write a textbook or a book on it because you haven't been there, done that. So a life experience gives you the credibility to understand what secondary trauma really is all about. You can't learn it in a classroom. You
Not
learn it in
much. I've
life.
seen the impact on my wife. And even other people. They wonder why is he acting like that? Well, sorry, I don't have time to explain it here in the elevator, but anyway, yeah,
I'm
that's
looking forward to that one, and anything I can do to help with that, it would be an honor. That's going to be a dandy. When are you anticipating that one coming out?
well, to do it, the deep dive that I want to do, and I'm sure Eugenia does too, I think we're going to need a year or more.
Yeah.
This needs to be well done, not quickly done, but well done.
Yeah.
And
If people want to get a hold of you, number one, to buy the books, is it just best for Amazon, or is it better to do it through a web page, or what's your preference on that, doctor?
Amazon, you can find most of them just searching for my name. And you can also search for Kevin Revig D Men, no periods. Some are under that. That's the best way.
Okay.
Just search for my name.
Well, I'll tell you what, I thank you so much for being on the program tonight. This has been a joy. Flew by fast. I'd love to have you on again. Maybe we can have you and your new co-author on sometime together and
That'll
talk
be
about,
great.
hey, I wasn't expecting to learn that, but we talked to this person and it gave us a different idea, a different insight. I would love to have that type of group conversation with you and Eugenia.
Well, that sounds great. That
Appreciate it.
sounds
Thank
really
you
good.
so much. And tell your wife, thank her for sharing you with us for an hour.
Well, I will thank her, and I thank you too.
Appreciate
Appreciate
it. Keep up the good work. There's still several more books in you. And I highly recommend Repurposing Scars. That's the one that I read. Excellent. Excellent from the beginning to the end. And I highly recommend that. But I'm sure all five of them are good. But that one, I want to put my AAA stamp of approval on.
I really appreciate that.
Thank you. Get this book and get it tonight, and it'll be right there. I downloaded it on Kindle. Just immediately, I was reading the book within seconds. It's an awesome way to do it. Thank you, doctor. Tell you what we need to do, and we always do each and every week, right here about this time, every week, live right here in my living room. I want to let you know, no matter what you're dealing with, no matter what you're going to face before you go to bed tonight, or when you wake up and you walk into the office, no matter if you're expecting a bonus to be on your desk and it's a pink slip saying head home, whatever it is, no matter what, I want to let you know. There's always hope. Never give up on hope. And you can make it. Stand strong, but make sure you're standing on something that's not going to cave in. And the only rock that will hold me for an eternity is the rock and foundation of God's word and the love of Jesus Christ. Thank you for being with us tonight. Hang with us and join back with us next week for another live edition of Breaking the Silence from Houston, Texas. Have an awesome week. God bless. Good night.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. To contact Dr. Williams, dial 832-396-6525 or email him at shatteredbythedarkness@gmail.com. And don't forget to join us each Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio Station 1 for the next episode of Breaking the Silence.